What happened at the world headquarters of Jehovah's Witnesses in the spring of 1980? Disturbances have been in the works for years in the organization known as the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society. These disturbances surfaced in the spring of 1980, and efforts have been made to conceal the dissension from the organization's followers known as Jehovah's Witnesses. A prominent member of the governing body and nephew of the organization's president has been removed from the governing body and was recently disfellowshipped. This man had served most of his life as a Jehovah's Witness. He was considered to be one of the anointed class and was responsible for writing such Watchtower publications as the Commentary on James book, the Youth book, and the Family book. Other distinguished members of the writing department also became the subject of intense interrogation and were eventually disfellowshipped or have left voluntarily by disassociating themselves from the organization. These men were responsible for writing their own Watchtower magazine articles and Watchtower book publications, such as Choosing the Best Way of Life, Life Does Have a Purpose, The Truth Book, and the much-used reference book, Aid to Bible Understanding. These books have been received and widely read by Jehovah's Witnesses who have trusted them as meat in due season from what they call God's organization. The writers of these books no longer believe the Watchtower Society is God's sole channel of truth. What caused so many of the headquarters staff to suddenly leave? Why have so many Jehovah's Witnesses all over the world recently disassociated themselves from the Watchtower organization? What's the issue of controversy? Why aren't all the facts available to the witnesses at the local kingdom halls? Randall Waters and Robert Sullivan worked and lived at Bethel, the Watchtower headquarters in Brooklyn, New York, during the period of turmoil. Robert Sullivan was baptized as a Jehovah's Witness in August of 1976. He served as an auxiliary pioneer in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, and as a pioneer in the State College congregation, also in Pennsylvania. Then he moved to New York, where he lived and worked at Bethel from August 1979 to March 1981. Robert was a ministerial servant at Bethel, and his job was to operate the case-making equipment. Randy Waters was baptized as a Jehovah's Witness in November of 1972. Prior to his move to Bethel, Randy served as a pioneer in the Canoga Park and San Luis Obispo congregations. Randy lived and worked at Bethel for nearly 6 years, beginning in November of 1974. He worked in the press room and quickly moved into positions of more responsibility and was instrumental in changing the factory over from letter presses to offset presses. Randy also traveled throughout the northeastern United States giving public discourses and slide presentations under the direction of the governing body and the service department. Randy left Bethel in July of 1980. Rob left in March of 1981. Let's find out why they left and what's happened to them since. Randy, I suppose some will assume you left the organization for reasons other than your own. Have you ever been accused of any misconduct, or have you ever been in danger of being disfellowshipped before you disassociated yourself?
No, not at all, Tom. I always managed to keep a pretty good record. I can show you letters of proof that I left Bethel with a good recommendation. Those at Bethel and in the congregation always knew me as what they call an organization man, one who would closely follow the policies of the organization. And I was a Bethel elder, and so I left with a good record.
Well, Randy, would you say you were stumbled by what you saw happening at Bethel? In other words, were you just stumbled by the actions of men?
No, Tom, I have to say that I wasn't. I had plenty of opportunities, though. If you're at Bethel, you realize that people have problems with one another. There's personnel problems, especially when it comes to positions of oversight. There's always people stepping on other people's toes, but you get used to that after being at Bethel for a while, and if anything, I might say that I grew kind of callous to people stepping on each other's toes. I really left Bethel because I came to realize that they were teaching false doctrine.
How about you, Rob?
Well, I too have a good record with the society, and have letters of recommendation from the congregation that I attended in New York. As for being stumbled by men, I really wasn't stumbled because I enjoyed my association with Jehovah's Witnesses. Some of them are my best friends, and even though they won't talk to me now, I still consider them my friends. Their conduct on the whole is far better than average, and I wasn't stumbled by man. It was the fact that they were teaching false doctrines.
So you both left Bethel in good standing, and you were both loyal witnesses. What caused you to start thinking about the teachings of the society?
Well, I'd have to go back a little bit, Tom, to around 1979. I remember myself and three other Bethel elders were going on a business trip to Massachusetts, and we were on our way to purchase some equipment for the society's printing operation. And in the car, we got into a discussion about Romans chapter 3, especially verses 27 and 28, where it speaks about Christians as being saved by their faith in Jesus Christ and not in any works that they can do on their own. And we got into a discussion about how the society had a number of rules that you have to follow. For instance, a witness cannot take a blood transfusion, they cannot smoke, they cannot vote, they cannot get involved in the armed services, they can't celebrate holidays or birthdays, they can't salute any flag. And on the other hand, there's quite a few things they have to do. They must go door to door. They must preach what they consider the gospel. In fact, years ago, they used to have a quota where you were supposed to go out door to door at least 10 hours a month and place a certain number of books. And they tell you that you have to go to meetings. They tell you that you have to accept what the Watchtower says without questioning it. And these are not really suggestions either, Tom, but they are actually rules for remaining a witness.
Even before these things had happened at Bethel, I had some questions about the book of Galatians. Brandy and I used to discuss them pretty often, but now that we were reading these other things in Romans, we discussed it much more frequently and began to appreciate the scripture at Romans 7:6. It says that we don't serve God in the old way, mechanically following a set of rules, but in a new way with our hearts and minds.
Well, now it seems clear that the Bible tells us we don't need rules in order to gain salvation. Are you saying the Watchtower Society has rules its followers have to obey in order to be saved?
Precisely. In fact, if any witness refuses to follow these rules of the society, even though they change from time to time, that witness would be disfellowshipped, and unless they come back to the organization's teachings, they believe that they will lose their life at Armageddon. On the other hand, if you do everything that you're supposed to do according to the organization, then maybe you will gain life, but there's no assurance of it.
Well, Randy, did you discuss this with the other Bethel family members?
Yes, I did, Tom. Not too long after that, I got involved in the book of Romans and Galatians and started studying on my own. I also came to realize that quite a number of Bethelites were having private studies on Monday nights after the Watchtower study that the family had. And they were getting together in their own rooms and basically just going through the Bible chapter by chapter and discussing it. The big difference being that they were not using the Watchtower publications. They were just using the Bible and freely discussing it. And it's interesting that many Bethelites were involved in these separate studies, even though someone who is in one study might not know that there was another study going on down the hall. It was almost in secret, but quite a few studies were going on.
How many are on the governing body at the Watchtower headquarters, Randy?
Well, when I was there, there was 17, but with the removal of Ray Franz, there was 16, and the death of William Jackson now brings the number to 15.
Were any of those on the governing body questioning the Watchtower's teachings of faith versus works?
Yes, Tom. Actually, you could go back all the way to the early 1960s. It was at that time that the president of the society, Nathan Knorr, had commissioned three men on a special writing committee to write the book Aid to Bible Understanding. And this was supposed to be an encyclopedia that would have all the Bible subjects listed in alphabetical order. And in this Aid to Bible Understanding, it would have a section on chronology. And in this section, it would show how the dates of 607 and 1914 were important in determining what they call a period of times called the Gentile times. And that also 1975 would be the end of 6,000 years of man's existence. And they came up with a lot of other interesting things in their studies. And they were told by the president, Nathan Knorr, and Fred Franz, the vice president, that they should research the Bible independently of what the organization teaches. And if they come up with something interesting that they are not teaching, then they should let the governing body know about it, and they would take steps to correct it. And so they discovered, for instance, that the first century congregations apparently had a body of elders, and so they instituted a rotating body of elder arrangement in the early 1970s. And they also came up with some other interesting things. But when 1975 came, and when they went back to their study on chronology that they had done, and they were wondering, well, why didn't the end come in 1975? Because most of the witnesses had expected it then. And so they began this research. The society, by the way, had built up this date of 1975 very much so that many had even gone out and sold their homes and possessions in anticipation of this. So as these men on this writing committee began to reinvestigate their chronology, they found out some very interesting things. Some dates that the society used to use beforehand, they had previously just taken for granted, like 607 BC and 1914. But as they went back and re-examined this, they could actually see that there was no basis for 607 as being an accurate date in the Bible. And there's also no basis for 1914 as being anything other than the beginning of World War I. And really, if you have to throw out 1914 as being an unreliable date, then you have to begin to question a lot of other things, because their beliefs are based on 1914. For instance, well, did Christ return invisibly in 1914? The scriptures do not indicate that at all. In fact, the return of Christ was supposed to be something visible that all people would see, and it would be very obvious according to the scriptures. Also, if 1914 is not the invisible return of Christ, then there is no such thing as a group of men which call themselves the faithful and discreet slave, who would supposedly be providing Christians with the right kind of spiritual food. Because even the Watchtower says that that is dependent, that idea of there being a faithful and discreet slave, is dependent upon Christ having returned in 1914. Also, there was other teachings of the society that were dependent upon their dates, such as the idea of there being two classes of Christians, a special anointed class, and then a great crowd, because this idea, or this class distinction, this division, was supposed to have taken place in 1935. And if you go back in the old watchtowers, you see that their explanation for 1935 as being an important date really meant nothing. It was all based upon their previous dates. And so a couple of men on the governing body, Ray Franz, and also another individual, Lyman Swingle, began to realize that these things that the society was teaching were apparently not in the Bible at all. Also, there was this committee of three that wrote the book Aid to Bible Understanding, and they realized that everything they had written in the aid book on the subject of chronology was inaccurate. And the three men who were on this committee were Ray Franz, Edward Dunlap, and Reinhard Linktat.
Well, now it seems that some conflicts were obviously developing here. Rob, did you notice any differences of teaching between the members of the governing body?
Yes, Tom, as a matter of fact, I did. I used to listen very closely to the governing body members as they would give their comments every day before breakfast. Ray Franz's comments stood out as being a little bit different. He talked a lot about Christian freedom, whereas most of the members of the governing body spoke of the organization most of the time. In fact, his comments were so different that I often took notes on them, and it fit in very nicely with the thoughts that we were gathering from Romans and Galatians. These speak of Christian freedom and serving God from your heart.
Randy, you'd mentioned something about a research committee. How did the governing body respond to the discoveries of that research committee?
Well, it goes back a few years. As this research committee and other members of the writing department were studying the scriptures, they could see a lot of things in the Bible are really left up to our conscience. There are things you can't make rules on, such as matters of employment, what kind of job you have, even matters such as smoking that are not directly prohibited in the Bible. It's something that you have to exercise a measure of your own wisdom and discretion in. And so rather than coming out and saying that there's rules in the Bible, several of these people would really write articles showing how we need to use our conscience. And then somebody would write in from out in the field and say, well, we can't just have this be a matter of conscience, because then everybody will be doing their own thing. And so the governing body would get excited and they would cause an article to be written making a rule on the particular matter. Now, all of this was going on back in the 60s and the early 70s. And so after 1975, When the members of this writing committee determined that these dates meant nothing, they knew that they just couldn't tell the governing body right out about their discovery, because the whole Watchtower system, their whole organization, was based on these dates. So they began to talk about it, just mentioning a few points at a time. And of course, it was not received well by the governing body at all. In fact, they became quite closed-mouthed about this and just refused to listen to it.
Well, now, there was obviously a lot of conflict within the governing body. What happened that blew this whole thing apart?
Well, as Randy mentioned earlier, there are many groups of people independently researching the Bible without using Watchtower publications. Three of these individuals were Chris and Norma Sanchez and Nestor Quaylen. It was discovered that their beliefs were not in harmony with the Watchtower and everything. They were quickly disfellowshipped. Since Chris and Norma and Nestor knew so many people at Bethel, and since they had been at Bethel a long time and were well-loved, their disfellowshipping did not go over well. Many people began to ask questions, and so part of what the governing body was trying to keep under cover was now in the open, and there was nothing they could do to change it.
How long had Chris been at Bethel, Rob?
He had served at Bethel for 13 years. His wife was there for most of those 13 years, and she was a witness for all of her life.
What caused him to question the Watchtower teachings?
Well, he was a Spanish translator for the Watchtower Society, and while they were working on the large print edition of the Spanish Bible, they came across some scriptures that did not fit in well with the Watchtower theology. One scripture in particular was Revelation 7:15. If you read that in the original Greek, which they sometimes do when they go over the translations, it is very obvious that this great crowd, spoken of in Revelation chapter 7, is in heaven. In fact, in the literal Greek, it says that they are in the divine habitation of God. So Chris wanted to question these things to find out what it really meant and how he should translate it. He asked around, and no one would give him a scriptural answer. They would always refer to the Society's publications, always giving the Watchtower viewpoint without using the Bible. He was not satisfied with this, and so he went to Fred Franz. He asked him how he should translate these verses. Franz told him basically the same thing, that the Society teaches this great crowd is on the earth, and that's just how it is. He was not getting any scriptural answers. So Chris began to look into the Bible even more. He came across scriptures like 1 John 5:1. This scripture says that all those, everyone, who believes that Jesus is the Christ, is born from God. This doesn't fit in with Watchtower theology because they believe that only the 144,000 are born from God, not all Christians. He also came across a scripture in John, the 5th chapter, verse 23. It says that we should honor the Son just as we honor the Father. Any Jehovah's Witness knows that you do not honor Jesus Christ as much as you honor the Father in their theology. Because Jesus Christ is considered lesser than God, he is in a secondary position, a creation. And so Chris could clearly see that the Watchtower teachings were not in harmony with John 5:23 as well as other verses. He continued to research these things more and more, and he spoke about this to some other of his friends. One of the elders that he spoke to became suspicious and reported Chris's comments to Bethel.
Well, Rob, what did the people at Bethel do about this?
Right away, they wanted to check up on this, especially since many of these things were happening in the governing body and there were the private Bible studies going on. They were very suspicious and very cautious about anything different coming out. So right away, they checked on it. They got a committee of two men together. This committee decided that this issue was very serious because they couldn't answer Chris's Bible questions. So they got a bigger committee together. It eventually was between 5 and 7 men, depending on when they discussed these things. They went through many hours of interrogation.
So Chris researched the Bible, and his results were based on Scripture. Why did the service department and the governing body react so strongly to this thinking?
Well, you have to realize, Tom, that the whole organization, the whole Watchtower organization, is based on the idea of unity. And they've made this statement many times that even if what we teach is wrong and it's discovered later, if you go ahead and try to push your own ideas, even though they're based on the Bible and may be correct, then you will cause dissension in the organization and you will not be marching with the rest of the group. And they say that everyone has to march together, so to speak, in their thinking, and that way that they will maintain unity in their organization. The interesting thing about it really is that When you go back to the early Watchtower writings of Charles Russell, who's the founder of the Watchtower, he wrote against organizations or forming organizations. And he spoke out against the idea of getting together in unity if it means sacrificing what your faith is based upon, if it ignores what the Bible is really saying. In other words, if something controversial comes up, it should be discussed rather than just trying to tone it down to keep peace in an organization and to keep it together. Well, this trend reversed to the point where Russell's followers did form an organization even before he died, and therefore we see the fruits of this today in an organization that will not tolerate the slightest bit of disagreement with their teachings and with their doctrines. It's like, well, they're like a pope, really, where the governing body states something that is accepted as truth, and it's just as if they're infallible. Only they will admit that we're right today, but later on it may change, and whatever that they say tomorrow, you will have to accept tomorrow as truth. And so, if we can't trust a governing body, the witness will say, well, whom can we trust? So they have to put all of their faith and all of their trust in this governing body who's teaching them.
Randy, do you have any proof or documentation that the Watchtower Society actually teaches these things?
Yes, Tom. We're going to consider in our next discussion plenty of evidence to show what the Watchtower Society teaches by looking into the Watchtower magazines over the last 100 years, especially in current events.
Well, I'm sure that's going to be interesting to those listening. Rob, what happened to Chris and Norma Sanchez and Nestor Quaylen?
I'm not exactly sure what happened to Nestor Quaylen, although I do know that he is now a Christian. But the last time I was in New York, I spent a week with Chris and Norma Sanchez, and we discussed these things in detail in order to dispel any rumors that might have developed. They said that they were immediately disfellowshipped, but it's very interesting to see exactly how they were disfellowshipped. The committee that was formed to interrogate them asked them a lot of questions, and they wanted to know why they believed differently than the Watchtower. Chris and Norma had scriptures to show them for why their differences were existing. The committee couldn't answer these Bible questions, so they resorted to very low tactics. They called Chris a sucker and a liar. They called him a leech and a cancer. This was very shocking to hear from men who were supposedly dignified members of the governing body. In fact, Chris asked one of the governing body members what 1 John 5:1 meant, because it seemed not to fit with the Watchtower theology. All Dan Sidlick could say was, "We're not here to answer your Bible questions." They treated Chris and Norma very badly. They disfellowshipped them, even though Chris and Norma said that they were sorry. They said they wouldn't spread their differences of belief. The committee, though, was so afraid that this scriptural knowledge would get out and that other people would become aware of it, that they knew they had to disfellowship them no matter what. So they invented another reason to disfellowship them, and that was conspiracy against the organization. They demanded that they would tell them the names of all those who believed in the same way they believed. The reason they did this is that they were convinced that there was a connection. They were convinced that the governing body member, Ray Friends, and the writing department members were all involved in this, and they thought they were all working together to overthrow the organization's teachings. This was the farthest thing from the truth, but they wanted to get them all exposed and eliminate the whole problem. But Chris and Norma knew nothing about it, so they couldn't give them any names. Consequently, they were disfellowshipped for conspiracy against the organization. They are normally supposed to give them a week to appeal disfellowshipping, but they actually gave them less than 24 hours. They were disfellowshipped on a Friday, about 5 in the afternoon, and the next morning at 11, they were told that their appeal was denied. The next day, Norma Sanchez tried to contact her family in Puerto Rico, and they were already informed of the disfellowshipping, and they couldn't talk to her. That Monday, the next day, they had to be out of Bethel with all of their possessions.
Now, they'd been around a long time, and I'm sure they had a lot of friends. How did this treatment affect the rest of the Bethel family?
Well, they were very surprised to see someone who was considered so loyal, someone who had been at Bethel and served faithfully for so long, all of a sudden disfellowshipped. They had a lot of close friends, and they were very well liked by a lot of people, and so many were asking questions about this. Many were actually crying when the announcement was made. Now there was no way that the governing body could keep this whole thing undercover any longer. They had to start talking about it.
Randy, did things at Bethel calm down after this?
Well, not at all, Tom. In fact, the atmosphere really became very intense. At Bethel, every morning a member of the governing body will get on and give some comments, usually from the day's text. But all of a sudden they started making comments about those who were leaving the organization and what they called the big apostasy. Now, there was a lot of defamation of character from the table every morning. And they were talking about people, most of whom I know personally. People were becoming afraid to talk about what was going on in private conversation as well. First it was Chris and Norma being disfellowshipped, and then these others that were disfellowshipped or removed. And in fact, the service department had formed a committee under the direction of Harold Jackson and became like a secret police investigating all of these things. They were going around and interrogating people and checking up on those that might be disagreeing with the society.
So there was quite a shakeup in progress here. Was Ray Franz or these other men on the writing department the root cause of all this disturbance?
No, not at all. Of course, like we mentioned earlier, Ray and Ed Dunlap and another individual were on this committee that wrote the aid book that first began to realize that the dates were wrong. But at the same time, there were others around Bethel and even outside of Bethel who, through their own research into the Bible, especially when they got into the books of Romans and Galatians written by Paul, they realized that we're not saved by works of law or by rules of following an organization, but we're saved by our faith in Christ. And so there was quite a number of different groups in Bethel who were discovering that the society was teaching something which was not in the Bible at all. And just because Ray Franz was on the governing body, he was a subject of attack in this situation. But actually, Ray and his wife Cynthia were on a leave of absence from Bethel when this incident happened with Chris and Norma and Nestor. And they really didn't even know Chris and Norma that well, and they certainly didn't communicate with them. There was another person involved, too, by the name of Rene Vasquez, who was not at Bethel, but his situation was a little different.
Well, Randy, what happened to Ray Franz?
What they did with Ray Franz is that they decided that Ray was the cause of most of their problems. So they wanted to frame Ray, they wanted to get him off the governing body and get him out of Bethel, and they felt that this might end the disturbance. So this committee, under the direction of Harold Jackson in the service department, got some tape recorders, and they went around extracting confessions from all of Ray and Cynthia's close friends of anything that Ray had ever said to them in personal conversation that could be used against them. Anything that seemed as if it was against the organization, or whatever kind of comment they might have made that seemed off the wall or not from the society.
You have to remember, too, that Chris and Norma Sanchez were just disfellowshipped for conspiracy against the organization. That's how it was announced to the Bethel family. And so everyone was in fear. If you didn't cooperate with the service department, if you didn't tell them everything they wanted to know, then you might be accused of conspiracy also. So there was a lot of fear involved.
Right, and so those that they questioned and recorded on these tapes were more than willing to give over any information they could to keep from getting in trouble themselves. And so the service department spent about 2 weeks making these tapes of all these confessions of Ray's close friends, and then they decided to call Ray back in and to play all of these tapes back to him to see what he would have to say for himself. Well, now Ray was aware of what the governing body was doing because he had kept in touch with friends at Bethel, and there was another member of the governing body who was sympathetic to Ray's feelings and his beliefs, and he had pretty much believed what Ray had come to believe. And so this individual was on vacation. Ray was able to get in touch with him and ask to meet him back at Bethel for this meeting with the governing body, hoping that he would stick up for Ray Franz and keep them from disfellowshipping Ray, because Ray didn't want to get disfellowshipped. His desire was not to overthrow the society, but rather to get them to think about these things. And so they made arrangements to meet together back at Bethel, and later on the governing body did not disfellowship Ray at that point, but they did strip him of all the privileges he had and told him to leave right then. Later on, they were able to find grounds for disfellowshipping Ray when he went out to dinner with his neighbor, who was an ex-witness.
Well, now, they tape-recorded interviews with Ray's friends, you say. What happened to Ed Dunlap and Reinhardt Linktat?
Well, Ed and Reinhardt were members, like I mentioned before, of this committee of three that wrote the aid book and that wrote the majority of the society's books for the last few years. And now they knew that Ed and Reinhardt probably believed the same things that Ray believed about the organization, as well as faith and works. So the service department formed a series of loyalty questions, that's what we called them, and they went around and asked these people some of these questions, as well as some of the other members of the writing department. Now, Ed Dunlap was very frank about his feelings of what the society was teaching, and since he would not be intimidated by this committee, he was disfellowshipped. And this was a very traumatic thing to Bethel, because many of us knew Ed Dunlap for years, and he was a very good teacher. He had been in the organization for years, and it was just really a great shock. But Reinhardt was not the same type of person. He's a non-committal type of person. And he said that he's been taught not to be dogmatic about certain things in the Bible, so he wouldn't commit himself on a definite stand. But he was put through a lot of interrogation, nevertheless, and later on he left Bethel on his own accord.
Randy, you mentioned they formed a list of questions to determine the loyalty to the organization. Did they start to interrogate others as well in the same manner?
Yes, as I mentioned, they decided it would be a good idea to go through the rest of the writing department and see if there's any others that disagree in the slightest way with what the society taught. So they took these loyalty questions and started asking the rest of the writing department, and they would ask other people, too, that they suspected might have had what they call apostate ideas. I remember one fellow by the name of Randy Mangles. He was a personal friend of Chris and Norma Sanchez. And the service department actually would redirect any phone calls that came in for Randy into the service department. And they would ask, well, why are you calling? And what information do you want to know? And he wouldn't even get a direct phone call from anyone without going to the service department first. Also, the service department committee started breaking up some of these personal Bible studies that we were having and that other groups were having. They became very disturbed at the fact that many members of the Bethel family were actually reading the Bible and talking about it on their own, apart from what the society has said about the Bible. And some were even getting critical of the Watchtower Society's stand on certain things. A good friend of mine, Mark Nevajohns, who was a Bethel elder, was disfellowshipped over this issue, and many others were turned in by their own roommates because of saying something that might be used against them. It was just unreal, the atmosphere that existed, because people were very suspicious, really suspicious of one another.
Rob, how did the governing body explain what was happening to the rest of the Bethel family?
Well, you have to realize that the Watchtower Society teaches that they are the only true Christians. No one else is a true Christian on the earth unless they're in that organization. So if a person who is considered good and loyal is all of a sudden kicked out, it looks very bad. So right away they wanted to make these persons look wicked. They wanted to make them look bad. So they, as Randy mentioned, started to call them a lot of names, spiritual fornicators, mentally diseased, and they wanted to make them look wicked. Eventually, Albert Schroeder gave a talk discussing apostasy. He wanted everyone at Bethel to fear becoming involved with these Bible study groups, and also to get into what they call apostasy. He tried to make it look like a terrible thing to be kicked out of the organization. It's ironic that he used the very article on apostasy that Ray Franz wrote in the aid book. He used the very article to try to put him down and put all those down who are reading the Bible on their own. Also, Carl Klein, another member of the governing body, commented at the breakfast table that if a person is reading the Bible and trying to get the deep meaning out of it, that he should get a hobby and keep his mind off it. In other words, they didn't want anyone reading the Bible and coming up with these same conclusions.
It's just unbelievable some of the things that they would say from the table, like you mentioned, to get a hobby and keep your mind off a deep Bible study.
The last time I was in New York, I was very curious about what they are trying to say about this apostasy, because they're always trying to make it look bad. They're always trying to make persons stay away from the whole idea and stay loyal to the organization. So I asked a member of the Bethel family, who did not know that I was no longer a witness, what they were saying about the apostasy. The idea now that they are trying to get across is that those who leave are weak persons who are afraid to go out in service, persons who are afraid to preach, and who are looking for an excuse to get out of the organization. Actually, nothing could be farther from the case, because most of those who have been disfellowshipped or have disassociated themselves were very loyal witnesses at one time. They were very zealous. Their only crime was to read the Bible on their own without the Watchtower publications.
Now let me reiterate something that you said. Ray Franz wrote the article on apostasy in the aid book. Is that right?
Yes, he did.
It just seems ironic that the Watchtower Society now considers Ray Franz to be the one who promotes apostasy. Randy, were you given any specific instructions as a Bethel elder in how to handle the situation that was developing?
Yes, Tom. Not too long after this, we had a meeting of the Bethel elders, and Albert Schroeder, who was the spokesman for the teaching committee at that time, he got up before everyone in a very stern voice, and he held up a book that's called Branch Organization Procedure, which is like a handbook for all the Watchtower Society's branch offices, and that's the only place you'll find one of those books. And he says that in this book are 1,177 rules and regulations for us, and that this is a fine-tuned organization. He said that what was going on was an apostasy from the organization, not from the Bible. And when he said that, I wondered, now what in the world is he saying? He's actually saying that this is not an apostasy from the Bible, because they really couldn't prove it was, but it was an apostasy from the organization's teachings. He didn't make that statement again, however, it was mentioned in the Kingdom Service later on. Another member of the governing body, Lloyd Berry, said in a talk to the members of the Bethel Elders group that we should have to be obedient to organizational instructions, and that we should be like an ass, be humble, and stay in the manger. That was his words. And the manger, of course, is the organization in their eyes. And thereby, he said, we won't get any food poisoning. So it was just amazing, the things that they were saying in this Bethel Elders meeting. I remember one Bethel Elder actually stood up during this meeting and said, Brother Schroeder, do you think that all of us should take an oath of loyalty to the organization right now? And I about dropped through my seat that they would say such a thing, because I would never pledge my loyalty to an organization. I would pledge my loyalty to Jehovah God.
Well, what effect was this having on you, Randy?
Well, I could see already that many of my friends had left Bethel because of what they'd seen happen. They'd seen the deception that the governing body used. Most of them had left voluntarily. Some were disfellowshipped. Mostly married couples were leaving, people who had been there for many years. Even friends who were there were being separated because of the spy atmosphere. I just never really seen anything like this happen in the organization before, and I could just see how cold people can be and just how simple little differences on teaching could cause people just to hate one another. It was just unbelievable. So it was rather distressing to me, but I was determined to really find out the truth of the matter and stick with the truth.
I remember at first we talked about this quite a bit, and one of Randy's comments was that it was simply the imperfection of men, and that we shouldn't be really disturbed about it because there were the example of what Jehovah had put up with the nation of Israel. There were so many kings, and most of them had made a lot of serious mistakes, but God still blessed the nation as a whole. So this is the way we looked at it. We didn't want to leave the organization. We thought it was God's organization. But we continued to talk about it quite a bit, and it encouraged us, or led us, to read the Bible more and more and really examine things.
I'd remembered reading in the yearbooks of Jehovah's Witnesses about disturbances they had had years earlier over the subject of dates, and I thought, well, this is just a phase they're going through, and things will maybe straighten out, and we shouldn't be stumbled by men. But as time went on, I began to see what the society was teaching, and their reaction to the truth, and how they would just put down truth and not try to examine it at all. And I began to wonder, is this Watchtower Bible and Tract Society really interested in learning the truth?
Okay, now Randy, there were obviously questions developing in your mind. What did you do?
Well, I said to myself, if these teachings are not based on the Bible, then the whole thing must be man-made. So I've got to make sure that this is God's organization. If they're basing their teachings on the Bible, if they're really representing God. So what I did, Tom, I went down to the Gilead Library, which is a very big library that the Society has with all of their old books and many other books, and I started to do research, which took me about 2 weeks or so. I took several subjects that I wanted to research, and these subjects were chronology, organization, the idea of there being 144,000 that would go to heaven and the rest would live on the earth, the teaching that there's a faithful and discreet slave, and I took these subjects and I started with the 1879 Watchtower, the very first one, and went through the last 100 years of Watchtowers in the bound volumes. And I would pick out articles that discussed these subjects, and I would note what they taught at that time and how their teachings changed over the years. And I could see that there had been quite a big difference of things along the way.
What conclusions did you reach from the research you'd done, Randy?
Well, this is what was really amazing. I was quite intrigued to find out that all of the dates that the Society had set were a series of broken promises. They had first said that 1874 was the invisible return of Christ, and when things didn't work out as they expected, they moved the return of Christ up to 1914, which they had already said was the end of the Gentile times, and which date they had thought was going to be the end of the world. They really believed that 1914 was going to be the end of the world, but that didn't happen either, and that's why there was so many that left the organization after 1914. So then they would set a new date for the end of the world, and they expected the bride of Christ, that is, in their organization, to go home or to go be with Christ around 1918 or 1919, and that didn't happen. They also expected the prophets of old to come back in 1925. That is Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and all the other prophets. They literally expected them to be resurrected in 1925. And obviously that didn't happen. 1975 was another big date as well. And I could see that Russell, the founder of the Watchtower, taught against organizations that do these type of things. And here they have a big organization that's all based on the idea of unity. I could see that the idea of class distinctions, of some people living on the earth and some going to heaven, just a chosen few, in other words, was a doctrine that was invented before 1935 because they thought that the end was near. They thought that the work had been wrapped up and that all of these other people could not possibly fit into this small number of 144,000. And so they had to have a designation to call the rest of the people by. And they called them the Great Crowd. Now they had previously believed that the Great Crowd was a secondary heavenly class that weren't quite good enough to go to heaven and be close to Christ, but they would be there nevertheless. And now they were saying that they're going to live on the earth. The interesting thing is that if you say that the Great Crowd is going to live on the earth, then you have to conclude that the Bible was not even written to the great crowd, because everywhere in the Bible, in Paul's writings and in the New Testament, it speaks of our hope as being in the heavens. And so to say that somebody's going to live on the earth and not go to heaven, well, they can't really be the Christians that Paul is speaking to. They have to be another type of person that none of these promises apply to, and that's why they were saying what they were saying.
Rob, what did you think of the research Randy had done?
Well, Randy had compiled about 9 pages of typewritten quotes from these different Watchtower articles. I remember one night he came and showed it to me. I read about 1/2 page of it, and I had to give it back to him. It shook me up so bad and upset me so much to see all the mistakes they had made. It wasn't little mistakes, as they call it, but they was actually claiming to be prophets of God, and then their prophecies were totally unfulfilled. To see this organization that I had so much faith in all of a sudden be exposed by their own books, it shook me up pretty badly. I couldn't read the whole thing, but eventually I did read it because my curiosity was aroused and I wanted to see what was really happening. I came to the conclusion that there definitely was something wrong with this organization. This was not the only thing that caused me to think this way, because the governing body comments each morning were verifying the very same points that the Watchtower articles were verifying.
Well, when you discovered that the organization was not God's organization, but was apparently a false prophet, you were in quite a predicament, weren't you, Randy?
Yes, I'll have to say that I was, Tom. I was really at the peak of my career at Bethel, having a lot of responsibility and being in charge of printing the New World Translation. And we were doing a lot of work with converting the presses to offset printing, and I was really having an enjoyable time. And then, to come to the realization through a study of the Word, that I had been misled by this organization, as well as millions of other people, because they say that they claim to represent God, but they were totally ignoring many parts of the Scriptures. It was kind of a double feeling I had. First of all, I was always dedicated to learning the Word more accurately and applying it in my life, and I was very excited to learn the things I was learning. And yet at the same time, I could see people being separated from one another, people losing their friendships. I could see an end to this career of mine at Bethel, unless I just wanted to be a hypocrite and go along with it and ignore the things that I knew. So I thought, well, I'm not going to remain at Bethel. I can't really see staying here in the midst of all these things, but maybe I'll just still continue to be a witness and just kind of ignore some of the things I've heard.
Well, Rob, what about you? You were also in quite a predicament, weren't you?
Yes, I was. I was always so sure of the organization before, and I based most of my life's decisions on following the organization. In fact, I had quit my college career to start pioneering. Now, all of a sudden, I had to start from scratch. My whole foundation was being shaken, and I had to research everything and re-examine my whole lifestyle. I still wanted to stay in the organization, though, because all my good friends were in the organization, and I didn't know anywhere else to go. But this caused me always to be thinking about the whole situation, praying about it, and asking questions, and reading the Bible a lot more.
Randy, in the midst of all this, did you discuss your feelings with your friends? Did they know how you felt?
You mean my friends at Bethel?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, no, I hadn't, because it was such a terrible spy atmosphere at Bethel there, Tom, that I would have been turned in for sure. I kept myself pretty closed-mouthed about my opinions and what I knew to be happening. And even at the point that I left Bethel, nobody really suspected that I felt the way that these others had felt who had already left.
So what happened? Did you disassociate yourself from the witnesses at this point?
Well, I went back to California where I grew up, and after studying the Bible for a couple of months, I decided to go back to a Kingdom Hall and see if I could continue to teach these things. And I did. I went back to the Kingdom Hall in California. And right away, I was reappointed as an elder and immediately put in a position of teaching. And after a month or so, I could see that I just could not be a hypocrite. I just couldn't teach false doctrine that I knew was not in the Bible. So I told the congregation that I had family responsibilities to take care of, and that I was stepping down as an elder, and that I would be leaving the congregation. And so I left the congregation at that point, and they really didn't fully understand why then. Just a month later, I decided to write a letter to all 16 members of the governing body, stating my feelings about the things that they had done. I also wrote this letter and sent a copy of it to many people I knew personally, as well as the congregation I had attended. And a few days after, I sent a letter disassociating myself from the organization of Jehovah's Witnesses. And so at that point, I did disassociate myself.
Well, now, Randy, when you were in the California congregation, you obviously had some different ideas. Wasn't your new way of thinking obvious to the elders at the El Segundo congregation?
Well, no, even then I didn't talk about my feelings, Tom, because I knew how they would be received, just as they were at Bethel. Everyone was so suspicious of anyone who thought anything slightly different from what the society taught. They had no idea of my feelings, even up to the time when I wrote them my letter.
Okay, now you'd left what you thought to be God's organization. Where else could you go?
Well, at that time that I wrote this letter to the governing body, I decided that I wanted to form a little study group of my own and get people together just to talk about the Bible and not use the Watchtower or other books or publications. And so I just happened to see an advertisement in the paper for a local fellowship, a Christian fellowship that was speaking about God's love and acceptance. And I thought, well, I'm going to go and see what this person is speaking about to see how closely they fit the Bible's teachings. And so I went and attended this local fellowship.
How would the witnesses have reacted if they'd known you'd gone to a church?
Well, if the witnesses had known, of course at this point I'd already more or less disassociated myself, but if they had known, they would have kicked me out of the organization just for setting foot in a church, because they consider that to be a very grave sin.
Randy, I think you have some Watchtower articles to show us later about how the society condemns and ridicules Christendom. Is that right?
Yes, that's the ironic thing. They condemn the churches very heavily, believing that none of them teach the Bible. And interestingly enough, at the same time, if anyone points a finger at the Watchtower, they get very excited and react in hatred toward those that point these things out.
Now, Rob, Randy had been your roommate and close friend. How did you react to what he was doing?
Well, initially, I thought that he was taking some of these steps a little bit too fast. It seemed to be a little radical, to tell you the truth. But Randy was corresponding with me and explaining exactly why he was doing these things, using the Bible. And I could see that what he was doing was scriptural. I was also listening to the governing body every morning, and their comments made it obvious to me why he wanted to get out of the organization. They were claiming to be God's representative on the earth, the only way to God. And we knew from reading the Bible this is only something that Jesus Christ can do. So I can understand why he wanted out of the organization, because of the way the governing body was saying things and because of their quotes from the Watchtowers. Even though I thought it was a little bit radical, I could understand where he was coming from.
Had you heard about the letter he sent to the governing body?
Randy had sent a copy of that letter to one of the elders in the congregation we attended. This elder quickly told the other elders about it, naturally, and they knew that I was Randy's good friend and his roommate. They also knew that I was asking a lot of questions about the organization and thinking about leaving Bethel. So they were naturally suspicious, and they wanted to find out what was happening. So they called me in for a meeting.
How did the meeting go? What happened?
Well, the first thing they wanted to know was if these things were really true, because Randy had in detail described what the governing body had done. They were pretty shocked to hear these things, and they didn't really know if it was true or not. So they asked me about it, and I told them exactly what did happen, and they were shocked. Their faith in the organization was affected noticeably. In fact, they ignored me for a few minutes and just sort of reestablished their faith in the organization by repeating several things that the organization teaches. For instance, there's no other place to go, and everyone else teaches false doctrines. Christendom is full of lies and hypocrisy, and there's nowhere else for us to go, so we're going to stay in this organization, despite what happened at Bethel. So they went through all this for a while until their faith was reestablished, so to speak. Then they started to ask me if my faith in the organization was affected. That stood out in my mind, because they were talking more about faith in the organization than anything else. They didn't ask about my faith in God or my faith in the Bible. All they wanted to know was about my faith in the organization. I always remember that, because as I went through this whole ordeal, this was a pattern. The main thing the witnesses put their faith in is the organization.
Rob, how did Randy's old congregation in New York react?
It's interesting to know exactly how they found out about Randy. One night I was about to give a talk at the Kingdom Hall, and one of the elders in the congregation tapped me on the shoulder and asked me to wait. He was going to give a talk first. For about 20 minutes he discussed what Randy had done, and that Randy was now an apostate, and they should never receive any correspondence from him or even talk to him. They also likened him to Miriam, who spoke against Moses, and they said that Moses is like the organization today, God's representative. Really, that's twisting the scriptures, though, because Moses pictured Jesus Christ. There are many scriptures that make that very clear. He was never meant to picture an organization of men. It's also interesting to see how the people reacted in the congregation, because they were afraid to talk about it. Even though they had known Randy for 6 years, and he was very well loved, he was an elder, he had dealt with a lot of people with their personal problems, you'd think they'd be concerned about him and asking questions and trying to help him. But they were so afraid of discussing these things that they just totally ignored the whole thing.
What about his old friends at Bethel? How did they react?
Well, it was very similar to the reaction that was received about Chris and Norma Sanchez. They were very surprised. In fact, they didn't want to believe it at first. They wanted to make sure that this wasn't just a rumor. There were also a lot of rumors going around because many people were disassociating themselves and being disfellowshipped. So once it was verified that he actually was disfellowshipped, actually he disassociated himself. They were very shocked, because Randy was always considered a very loyal Bethelite, an organization man. He was very strict with the organizational policies, and had been at Bethel a long time, so it really did come as a shock to them. They also knew that I was his roommate, and so they asked me what kind of things he was thinking before he left, what made him come to this conclusion. So I took this opportunity to bring up some of the issues that had come up, some of the research that Randy had done. They were very afraid to talk about these things. They didn't want to be reported as apostates because of the spy atmosphere that was going on at Bethel, and they wanted to ignore anything that I said about it because it shook up their faith in the organization. A few times they even asked me if I was becoming an apostate. I had thought that I could just bring these things up into the open so that they could be discussed. The witnesses always say, if you have the truth, there's nothing to fear. But they didn't want to talk about these things. They did have a lot of fear, and they were trying to follow the governing body's instructions just to ignore the whole situation.
Well, now, Randy, this was quite a radical change for you. Tell me about the transformation you were going through.
Well, I mentioned to you before, Tom, that I had gone to a Christian fellowship. In fact, I'd already went to two or three different fellowships to see what was really being taught by other groups of people. You see, the Watchtower does a very good job of brainwashing people against any other group of persons that call themselves Christians. And so most witnesses would never dream of ever setting foot in another type of fellowship or church group. Well, this I did because I had come to the realization from my studies at Bethel that there were other Christians in other places and that being a Christian was not determined by every last little minute definition of doctrine like the Witnesses believe it is. And so I didn't feel uncomfortable in being in other groups of people that call themselves Christians. I had been raised a Baptist, so that I knew that churches were not what the Watchtower says they were. So I began to attend this one fellowship, and I became very interested in the fact that they were going through the Bible chapter by chapter, just as we had done at Bethel in our private studies in our own rooms. And the pastor at this one group was teaching from the Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. And I was so intrigued by the people that were going there and engaging in worship of the Father and the Lord Jesus Christ, which was something entirely new to me, because Witnesses are taught not to worship Christ. Now this I could really see began to do a work of conviction in my heart. I could see what had been missing all of my time as a witness. It was a lack of having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And I really feel that if you're really truly a Jehovah's Witness, you cannot have a real meaningful personal relationship with Christ, because they teach against anything that has to do with worship of Christ or a real close relationship with Him.
Okay, Rob, you eventually left Bethel also. What made you finally decide to leave?
Well, there were actually many things that made me decide to leave, but there were two that really stand out in my mind. One incident was a friend of mine who I studied the Bible with. He used to come to Bethel and we'd study the Word together. One day, he was waiting for me in the lobby, and he picked up a magazine. It was the February 15th, 1981 Watchtower. He was reading it while he was waiting, and he came across a quote that said, "You cannot find the scriptural guidance you need outside the Faithful and Discreet Slave organization." In other words, they were saying that you had to come to them, or to their organization, to understand the Bible, and there is no other way. Of course, from my Bible reading, I knew that this was wrong. One scriptural example would be 1 John 5:20. It says there that Jesus Christ gives us the intellectual capacity to understand the Bible, to understand anything dealing with God. We don't have to go to men. And so when my Bible study asked me if I agreed with this statement in the Watchtower, I told him no. I couldn't lie to him. I couldn't tell him that I agreed with that because I knew it was scripturally wrong. And this was really making me think now, what am I doing making these books and distributing their literature and helping them, supporting them, if I didn't really agree with what they are teaching? There was also one other incident that was very instrumental in my decision to leave Bethel. On October 6, 1980, Fred Franz gave a talk on the organization. Many people at Bethel were asking about this, why they were using the word organization so much if the word is not even in the Bible. So this was what Fred Franz's talk was going to be about, why they use this word organization so much. He tried for about an hour to find scriptures to support the idea of God's organization on the earth, the only way to God. There was actually no scriptural way he could prove it. It was obvious if you were open-minded and really paying attention to what he said. In fact, I took some very detailed notes on the talk. There's no way you can prove from the Bible that there's only one organization and that you have to get the truth through them. So after this talk, I was really convinced that I wanted to leave Bethel.
But Rob, with no organization to look to for leadership, where did you go?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I didn't know where else to go. First, I just went back home and I went to the congregation where I'd first come in contact with the Witnesses. Again, I tried to get answers to these different questions I had. I talked to some of the elders in the congregation. Naturally, I had to be very careful because they were suspicious of anyone at this point because of all the Watchtower articles that were coming out. But I still didn't get any scriptural answers. I kept hearing the organization, the organization. That was the basis of their faith, and that's what they talked about more than anything else. I was getting pretty frustrated, and I wasn't getting any answers that I wanted. However, Randy was staying in touch with me, and he sent me a copy of a tape. The tape was a talk that discussed Galatians, the third chapter. It explained that we should never put our faith in men, or in the rules of men, or in organizations, but our faith should be directly in Jesus Christ. This made a lot of sense to me. It sounded very logical and very scriptural. And I thought, well, I need some kind of association where they're not putting faith in an organization. And so I decided to go to California to investigate this. One of the first things I noticed, as did Randy, was that they did have a close relationship with Christ, and they emphasized Him quite a bit.
Well, now you talk about faith in Christ, but so do the Witnesses. But there seems to be quite a difference in views here. How do the Witnesses view Christ and the Trinity?
Well, no Jehovah's Witness will actually worship Christ, although they used to when the organization first started. That quickly changed. They've even said in writing that you cannot worship him more recently. They also believe that he is a creation of God, that he is the chief angel of God, and that he's not God himself. So they also believe that the Trinity doctrine is a doctrine of demons and is totally false.
You know, I'll never forget my first encounter with Jesus Christ. It was like having a blindfold lifted off my eyes and God became real to me for the first time in my life. What did you come to realize about Christ, Rob?
Well, one of the first things I noticed in the church I attended was that they were very warm and friendly, and they had a closeness to Christ that the Bible often speaks about. If you look at John, the 14th and 15th chapters, you'll see this very clearly. And I'd seen this in the Bible before and talked to other Christians about it as I went door to door. Finally, these things began to come together, and I realized that I really didn't have that closeness with Christ that I should, because I was still following the Watchtower teachings. So I began to look into the Bible a little bit more. I noticed that several scriptures say that we can talk or pray to Jesus Christ. 1 Corinthians 1:2 and Acts 7:59 are examples. Also in John 14, verse 14, it says that Jesus actually answers our prayers and hears our prayers, and we pray to him. I also began to notice scriptures that talked about Jesus being God. Isaiah 9:6 says that he is the mighty God, and Isaiah 10:21 refers to Jehovah with the same words. John 1:1 says that the Word was God. I began to think about this. If Jesus is a God, as I had once thought, and the Bible says that we can pray to him and worship him, then actually, if you believe, as the witnesses do, that he is not God himself, you are actually worshiping two gods. Anyone who reads the Bible knows that you cannot worship more than one God. As I prayed about this and read the Bible more, I could see that Jesus is actually God manifested in the flesh, and there are many scriptures to this effect, which we will cover later. I also saw Colossians 2:6, and it refers to accepting Jesus Christ. John 14 talks about him living in us and us being in him. There are many scriptures to this effect, Revelation 3:20 and John the 16th chapter being two more. So I began to think about this. I had never really accepted Christ before. I never thought that he could live within me. I thought that this was only for the 144,000. Now I had come to a different conclusion, and I decided that I would accept Christ. Things changed very radically after that.
So both of you now have accepted Jesus Christ as Lord of your life. Randy, how has your family reacted to this?
Well, I originally got my mother and my sister and my brother-in-law and even my old girlfriend involved in the witnesses, Tom, and now when I came out of Bethel and I began to talk to them about what had happened, I found out that my mother was already convinced that the organization was too dogmatic with the scriptures, and she knew that there were other Christians elsewhere as well, so she was ready to come out. And we began to talk to my sister and my brother-in-law, and it took a while, and finally they could see the truth about what the Bible was saying. In time, my whole family came out of the Watchtower Society. My father was never really a witness, but he was happy to see us come out, and he also has accepted Christ now. So there's been a lot of changes, and I'm very happy about what's come about as a result.
As we conclude the first part of this interview, let's look back at what seems to be the beginning of the errors of false teaching. Randy, you say the Watchtower Society claims to be the only source for God's truth, and only they can interpret the Bible. Is that really what they teach?
Yes, they do, Tom. You often find that religions, or some people who are called cults, will teach a number of things that identify themselves as a cult. One of them is that they teach they are the only way to God, and that they alone have the truth. The second thing is that they make Jesus Christ a secondary figure. Yes, they say you have to accept Christ, but you've got to accept this and that as well. You've got to do this and that. You've got to follow our rules. The third thing is that they don't consider, or they aren't allowed to consider, the thinking of other people on the scriptures. They will not go to commentaries by people who study the Bible. They won't go back to the original Greek and Hebrew manuscripts and really seek out the original meaning. Also, a fourth thing is that they say that only our group is going to gain salvation. You have to be a part of our organization. And unfortunately, this has happened to Jehovah's Witnesses as well as many other groups.
Well, this has all been very enlightening. In our next discussion, we're going to consider some of the teachings of Jehovah's Witnesses, not only at present, but some of their past teachings. And we're going to see how they've changed, why they've changed, and what this means for a person who's involved in this organization. Thank you, Randy Waters and Rob Sullivan.